It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
A lot going on today. There was intra-squad action going on the north side and the south side with their baseball teams. Rizzo continues to nurse that back. We've had some signings in the National Football League. It wasn't Dak. And a lot to discuss with the NFL and their negotiation and when they will start their season. Waddle, let's talk about it all with Michael Wilbon. They're brought to you by your guys at Hawk.
That's right, HawkAuto.com. Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, and VW all in one place. HawkAuto.com, where Chicagoland saves big.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Guess what today is?
It's Wilbon Day. Chicago native Michael Wilbon, host of Pardon the Interruption, with Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN Chicago.
As always, can't miss radio with Wilbon. Michael, hope you're doing well. Here's what I want to know. This was the big topic of the show yesterday. If you're in the bubble and you have a chance to win a title and you see someone violating rules, are you calling and using the snitch hotline?
I don't know that. I don't. That really isn't my deal. That's not me. So I doubt it. If I get a chance to win a title, let me just control what I can do. Let me and my people stay in the bubble. And if I see one of my guys doing something risky, I'm going to tell him. I'm not going to tell a hotline. So I'm going to be like, dude, what the hell are you doing? So I don't think I would. I'm not blaming others for not do if they do it, but I don't think I would.
I'm snitching the hell out of it right now. I'm doing, listen, Mike, if I'm trying to win a title and I got money, like there's money on the line, and I see some bozo over here stepping out of line and going to a club or something, and he's trying to get back in. First of all, I'm going to him, and I'm saying, listen,
what you're doing is wrong. Saying. I'm going to him first.
But Mike, I'm going to ask him, turn yourself in, and if not, you know, I'm going to Ray Donovan you, right, and I'm going to take care of it myself.
Yeah, I'm not blaming anybody if they do it that way. I don't think I would. I would go to him and say,
What if he says, get away from me, Wilbon. You worry about yourself.
Then I might have to go out of character a little bit.
Then
I mean,
snitch on him.
Is, you're not going to – I think what they're seeing, the snitch hotline largely makes itself available – if you see somebody not social distancing in the bubble, or if they don't have their mask on or something like that, if you have your mask on and your social distancing, I don't know that person would necessarily affect you in the bubble. But there are a lot of ifs. I mean, there are a lot of conditions. I have to know exactly what was being presented to me before I can make that call anyway.
Michael, we know life is hard to begin with right now. I mean, life is hard in general. Life is hard with what we're going through, no matter if you're at your home or you're away. But when you hear NBA players complain about where they are, do you side with them? Do you understand? Or do you kind of wag your finger and say, look, this is you guys have a nice privilege here of playing basketball for a living. You've earned it. Stop complaining about what you guys
both,
don't
a
have.
Couple of things. A couple of things. I talked to somebody this morning, a player in the bubble, who said to me he didn't want to hear any more complaining from his peers. And he was pretty tough about it. He said, I don't want to hear it. Don't want to hear anything else. I see Disney employees who make minimum wage, you know, walking, you know, in a hallway saying, hey, what can we do? Are we doing the right things? Can we do anything for you? And he's like, I don't want to hear it. He's a responsible, older player who just gets it. On the other hand, and I said to him, this is the hardest thing. Like, I can't even perceive how hard this is. And this is going to be, we talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago. Like, for the people who say, yeah, this deserves an asterisk for how difficult it is that difficult. It's different. There's a difficulty level to which we have no idea. And so I get both of them. And, yeah, I would say, you know what? This is hard. This is harder than anything you've probably done. But on the other hand, there are people who are having to deal with some of these rules and the sort of the sense of the spirit of rules and the letter of rules who are making minimum wage. So while it's really a really, really difficult thing, it's also really hard for a lot of people.
You
try to be a little understanding, but then, you know, the lack of tolerance would kick in probably.
I know for all of us, it vacillates from day to day, from hour to hour. Where's your confidence level that these sports are going to be able to pull this off? They're pulling it off in the MLS, the PGA. It looks like baseball's starting in 9 days. Are you confident that the NHL and NBA can get this off the ground?
Well, the NHL more so. 9 days is a lot of time for stuff to go wrong. No. I mean, 9 days? Not particularly. I'm not going to go to Vegas on what we see today and will that be, you know, in effect in 9 days. I think they're to be commended. I think, you know, all of them, and particularly baseball, basketball and hockey, NHL and NBA, are to be commended for the way they went about this and understanding what they were trying to do and understanding it would be really difficult. And the two communities buying in. So, yeah, I think it's going to happen. I hope. I mean, you know, we're in an industry, we're in a business. We make our living covering sports.
Yep.
And so I'm hopeful, very hopeful.
I've watched more soccer than I'm even willing to admit right now, Mike. I am. I mean, my goodness. And I love soccer, but
I'm watching the Bundesliga. I mean, it's okay. Yeah. Let's get a grip. You know, I'm watching a practice round on the Golf Channel right now.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, Tiger's involved, too.
Well, yeah, I'm watching Jon Rahm and Tony Finau and Graham McDowell and, you know, guys have practice rounds, some of this for charity. I'm watching that the day before, you know, at the Memorial. So, you know, we're all starved for this. But am I going to get ahead of myself and say that I know all these things are going to carry out? No, I don't. I don't know it. And I'm just not willing to become part of the hype machine that says, we got to have this. We're going to have it. We don't know that. We didn't know that California was going to be closed down again in the middle of July.
If they are able to pull this off, Mike, I mean, will you look back at it and say, wow, what a concerted effort by so many different people to make this happen. This was really,
oh, yeah,
really,
I don't have to
really
look
impressive.
Back at it. I can see that now. If it happens, I can see that now. That's what I'm saying. People don't understand how hard this is. I have a sense of it. Because I'm talking to people in the bubble every day, in the NBA bubble. I'm talking about players and or media people and or staffers. You know, I'm talking to people every day in the bubble. And I have a sense of how hard it is. So I don't need to get on the other side before I can say, wow, it's amazing that you guys have done this.
Yeah.
The one thing about it, Michael, is, and we've talked about this week after week with you, and the I don't know has always been a part of this because we don't know. But like what I'm finally allowing myself to do is dream about how good this could be if it does work out. Like we're going to be getting some NBA games in the afternoon. We're going to get hockey games in the afternoon. We're going to obviously get baseball every single day for 60 straight days. Like this, I'm starting to think and allow myself to at least think about sports now because we are getting closer.
I'm not.
No.
I'm just not there. Just not there. It's like, you know, when we get there, I'll be thrilled. I will be. I make a living, let me say it again, covering sports. So I'd be really thrilled. But, like, I don't know. Today, I don't know. I don't know that. I mean, I talk to people who are worried. I talk to people who are trying to help sports come back. I'm talking about all the different sports. And at some point, the people who are charged with the responsibility of that, some days they sound really up, some days they don't. Some days they sound down and worried as hell. And so knowing the reality of that worry, there's no need for me to get anticipatory yet. To what end? When it happens, good. But I'll wait till it happens.
What are you hearing from your friends and colleagues around college football?
Not good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not good. How are they going to put kids on a campus and let them be students and also know that they're going to test negative day after day? They're not going to know that. And so I understand $4 billion are at stake. some schools need this money more desperately than others. Everybody wants it to happen. But, wow, I don't know. It's hard to see.
Listen, from the what, Big Ten doesn't play, Mike. You're going
to directors and to, you know, university muckety-mucks. I mean, people who occupy some positions of power. And they're somewhere between skeptical and cynical. And even the ones who are very hopeful, they're not going to use the word optimistic.
Right.
I mean, they hopeful is as far as I've heard anybody go, Tommy. I don't know if you guys have talked to anybody who you would characterize as any more than hopeful. But I haven't. And it's not to say they're pessimistic. They're trying. Some of these people are going to work every day with the express intent and goal of having a season start at some point this fall and play this fall. But we've already heard others say, hey, this may happen, but it ain't happening till spring. We've heard people say that.
There's just so much money. There's so much money at stake. Like, that new facility at Northwestern is one of the best mm-hmm. I've ever seen. There's got to be some debt service on that. So if there's no college football this fall, I can see a call coming to Mike Wilbon. Hey, Mike, can you give us a little extra something this year?
Yeah, well, let me tell you, first of all, you're right. Not necessarily about my institution, but you're right. There are going to be calls like that. But one of the things that schools are really concerned about is annual giving.
Right.
What does annual giving revolve around the most? Football games. Football. Big games, homecoming. This is my 40th reunion. This is a big homecoming year for me.
Wow.
This is the time in my class, the time where people come back and they feel good about going to alma mater and they give a little more freely than usual. And if you got a good team, you got a big bowl game coming up. I mean, just 2 years ago, we had the situation in Northwestern where we went to both the Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis and then a bowl game in San Diego on New Year's what Eve. I mean, these are big giving events.
Yeah.
And annual giving is something schools depend on. All of them. Look at Stanford. Stanford just canceled ball sports. Stanford is the third richest school in America.
$27 billion
endowment.
Yep.
What's that?
$27 billion endowment.
Okay, so third. And Northwestern is probably eighth or ninth. I mean, we're in the top 10. So if rich schools are having these issues and trying to figure out what the hell to do, what do you think schools that have much less in the way of means are doing when that football gate is not coming in? So, I mean, this isn't just a matter of, oh, do we have football? People's livelihoods are at stake here.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see where this goes. If it goes to spring, if their teams are going to try to play and patchwork stuff in the fall. More Michael Wilbon coming up here after the break. I want to ask him his thoughts on Cam Newton about the NFLPA discussion and players not getting paid if they get COVID. More coming up with Wilbon next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
Our conversation with Michael Wilbon continues. Michael, you've never been scared to go after your own network when deserved. Have you been as surprised, I guess. I've just been annoyed at the breathless nature of, like, it seems like a Dak Prescott story every half hour with nothing going on. Have you ever seen
anything
like
that? For weeks. Basically, and these people, the people I'm about to name now are not just friends. These are my dear friends. I love them, okay? So, get up. Starring our own Mike Greenberg, again, Wildcat, my man. And First Take, co-starring my man Stephen A. Smith. These two shows have created the Dak Prescott story. There's no story that the most of us care about. It's just not. We don't care. Don't tell me people outside of, I mean, the NFC East, okay? So they're New York, Philly kind of guys, I guess, and Dallas is in the NFC East. Don't tell me that people in California or people in Illinois or Arizona or Pennsylvania, well, Pennsylvania, Philly, or Georgia. Or why do they care about Dak Prescott? And why is this a story? He's going to get $31 million. $31 million. God bless him. But the notion that, you know, it's a big deal because he's not being signed to a long-term deal, this is one of the overstated non-stories of our time.
Yes.
And I love them. I love them. I love them. It's a non-story. It is just a made-up thing that, and it's okay. When you have your own show, you can talk about what you – I'm sure they look at my show. They look at PTI and say, what are Wilbon and Cornette talking about this for? Because it's our show. And it's their show. They can talk about whatever they want to talk about. But I have zero interest in Dak Prescott.
Mike, would a better conversation be why has Jerry Jones been so silent the last couple of months on a number of different issues?
Yes, and they have talked about that too, Stephen A. in particular. And I started this weeks ago. Weeks. The week after the George Floyd murder. Where's Jerry Jones? He didn't say a word. And said boo. That is much more important to me than whether Dak gets, a guaranteed extra 2 or 3 years. I don't care. And I don't know anyone. No one has walked up to me and said, man, what about Dak Prescott? And I live in a city where people do care about the Cowboys because it's Washington. It's an arch rival. I've not talked to one. No one has said to me a word about Dak Prescott.
I know. I can't believe it. It's like every half hour we've got
every
breaking
day.
News that there's
every
no
morning
news.
I wake up and I turn on this Dak Prescott.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even my son is said to me, Matthew's at 12, and he cares about all things NBA and NFL. He's turning into – he might be able to host, an hour of his own soon about certain topics, those two particular, NBA and NFL. And he's like, Dad, what is a Dak Prescott obsession? I'm like, dude, I have no idea.
Well, if it's not Dak, Mike, it's Sylvie talking about his Cam envy here in Chicago because I think Sylvie's
Cam envy.
Cam
I don't have Cam envy.
Well, he was cheap.
The
risk was low. I just think when you're the Bears and you're looking for a new quarterback, why not for what it would have cost?
I agree with that. I don't have envy. Envy means I have Patrick Mahomes envy.
Yes.
I have my man in Houston.
Deshaun Watson envy?
I have Deshaun Watson envy because they were sitting there ready to be taken by a guy who said, no, let me trade up and get a guy no one's trying to trade up to get and throw away two or three additional picks too. Let me do that. So I got envy about those two guys, not Cam. I don't know. Is Cam Newton healthy? I don't know. Cam Newton brings a lot of drama. He's gay. And you know, when you go 15-1 and you're the MVP, it ain't too much drama. You can do whatever you want. But when you're not the MVP and you're not even playing, you're not even on the field, I don't know.
He's doing a lot of sharing with the chip on the shoulder. It's one thing to have a chip on your shoulder, but he's telling everybody. So he's really got to back this up.
He's put the pressure on himself. And I disagree with who was it? Maybe it was Marcus Spears. I love it too. Marcus Spears. I'll tell you the other topic is Kansas City a dynasty? What? How many years you got to go with not just good fortune and good great results, but good health? I mean, dynasty, really? There's been about, what, 8 dynasties in NFL history? Like every decade, there seems to be close to a 4-1. So the Bears in the 40s, the Browns in the 50s, the Packers in the 60s, the Steelers in the 70s, the 49ers kind of in the 80s. The Cowboys in the 90s, and then the Patriots ever since. So there have been, whatever I just named, whatever, 7 or 8 of them. But how many teams have we thought? I mean, the Bears were so young in 1985. Thought they could have been a dynasty. They weren't. They may have had the greatest team out of all those teams, but they weren't a dynasty. And so this notion that the Kansas City Chiefs are going to have a dynasty because they gave – Patrick Mahomes a lot of money. I mean, what is that? What? Are you people watching sports? You know how hard it is to have one of these things? People just, it's like they just start talking and it's like, are you watching sports? Do you see the injuries that knock people from a perch? So one of the things I was talking with about young Matthew in the last couple of weeks, he said, Dad, what's like your all-time team of guys who got injured and never were what you thought they were going to be? And I said, That's a great question.
Yeah.
Well, it includes Derrick Rose.
Sure. Yep. Mark Pryor.
It includes their, well, we were talking about basketball. If we did cross sport, I can do that too. Because we were talking about Derrick Rose and Gail Sayers. And Matthew wanted to know why. He wanted to know about my obsession with Mr. Sayers and how that evolved and what he was like. And he's seen the clips. He says, Dad, there's not that many clips. I'm like, that's part technology and part he didn't play. Only played like 69 NFL games, something like that.
Nice.
And Derrick Rose is one of them. Tracy McGrady's one of them, Grant Hill. And he's met Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill. He knows them. And he's fascinated by the fact that they are now these guys he sees on TV. And then when he sees the clips, he's like, oh, my God. Dad, I didn't have any idea. I'm like, well, that's what happened. That's the lesson for Patrick Mahomes. And you, by the way, it's a lesson you can't learn. You can't do anything about it. You can just hope to have some good fortune and avoid it. But, you know, I mean, look what the Orlando Magic would have been with Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill. Are you kidding? Look how great they would have been. And they did not have the fortune of the good fortune of great health.
Let me ask you, Michael, about Rose really quick, because I've seen this get more momentum recently, that people still make a case that Derek could be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that's what we got on that topic. I don't know. These days, it's not like it was 30 or 40 years ago when people, the eye test took up so much of the evaluation time and effort. Man, people don't trust their eyes anymore. They don't even know what they're looking at. And I'm talking about people who vote. So they don't. They go numbers first. They go numbers first. They don't take into account impact. You know why? Because numbers can't assess impact often. Sometimes it can, but sometimes it doesn't, not accurately. And so they can't assess it. So they can't, you know, assess the impact, and they look at the number of games, they look at, you know, something. I value longevity as well. And Derrick Rose, on two levels, he sort of qualifies. One is that incredibly young MVP who got a team at 21 years old to the conference finals and up 10 points in game two on LeBron James and the Heat. And, you know, even if the Bulls had got to the finals that year, it would have helped. And the other one is in college. You led a team to the finals. I mean, remember, there's one basketball Hall of Fame. And that's why Grant Hill is easily in it, because Grant Hill basically is the greatest player in Duke history. I make that argument even above Christian Laettner, because he did something Laettner didn't do. He got to a final game without Laettner. Laettner never got to a final game. Maybe he did get to a final game without Grant Hill, but he didn't win one without Grant Hill. Grant Hill got to a basket, a long shot by Scottie Thurman from Arkansas of winning a third one. And so college basketball very much counts, and Derek, that helps Derek's case. And I'm just hoping, you know, maybe longevity, how about this, if longevity helps Derek Rose, playing at the level he's playing at now, if he can do this for two or three more years, that helps him. All of this helps him. And maybe he plays, maybe he does this not for a bad team, maybe he does it like Bill Walton did at the end for a great team. I hope all those things for Derek, knowing him and liking him as much as I do.
Let's play the Hall of Fame game, because this is something that Sylvie and Jeff Meller and I were talking about a little bit earlier, okay? With knowing all that you just said there, but I'm going to go to football. Is Phillip Rivers a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I can make the case both ways. I mean, has he played in one AFC title game? Is that it? One?
Yeah, that's
he
when he
played
was
in
hurt,
it with,
right?
A, with a torn ACL,
yes.
Right? Didn't he play in the game in New England, was it, where he
yes.
played with a torn
oh, wow.
ACL?
I didn't even remember them playing that game. But that's
where it's kind of
I
where
in, Michael. He's
I have
in.
To sit down with people making the case for him.
Okay. Matt Ryan.
At this point, no.
But could change your mind going forward.
Oh, all these guys can change my mind going forward. Even
okay.
Phillip Rivers. Suppose Phillip Rivers has a great year with Indianapolis or 2 years and three seasons. That pushes him over the top. Matt Ryan's got time. What is Matt Ryan, 32 or 33?
He may be a little older than that.
I figured he's played like 11 years. So, I mean, Matt Ryan's got time. I mean, Matt Ryan is the final chapter I've been written.
He's 35. Matt Ryan's 35.
He's 35?
Yeah. Okay, so we'll play the game. Is he a Hall of Famer currently right now? So,
okay.
So Rivers, yes or no right now?
I think I'd vote for him.
Okay, Matt Ryan.
I think I would.
Right now.
I think I wouldn't, but
Eli Manning.
I think I wouldn't right now. Oh, I'm voting for Eli Manning.
Yes. Okay. Cam Newton.
No.
Okay.
No.
Those are the four
conversation this morning. This morning, every day, my son is obsessed with the Hall of Fame. And every day we go through this. Dad, so-and-so Hall of Famer. I'm like, can you stop? Can you just appreciate the career? So this morning over Cheerios was Cam Newton. Dad, Cam Newton, right now, if he doesn't play in the game, is he a Hall of Famer? I said, no, Matthew, he's not. He's had three great seasons.
I agree with you. I had the same thought. Like, the season in 2015 was spectacular.
It is, but it's one.
But yeah, and I appreciate all that he's been able to accomplish, but I wouldn't put him in if I had a vote right now.
Can we do a segment with the two of you? By the way, can we like next week, can we do you and Matthew together?
Yeah.
Oh, God. This kid, I mean, the Hall of Fame obsession. So what I haven't introduced him to the Hall of Fame monitor, whatever site that is. I literally don't want him looking at it. But I make him look up whatever that sport is, you know, pro football, like basketballreference.com, footballreference.com. You know, every reference.com is the site. That's like when I was growing up, I explained to him I had to sit there with an encyclopedia that my parents had to pay like $100 for a year. Right. And they wanted to kill me. But I would watch every Cubs and White Sox game. I would watch it with the encyclopedia in front of me. And so now he knows, don't come and ask me. Go to soandsoreference.com. You better know all the numbers before we get into a heated discussion about whether or not this person belongs. And so there's way too much time taken up in our household on this thing. So you guys are just giving me a nightmare right now.
Yeah, we got to talk to him soon. Michael, great stuff. All the best, okay? We'll talk to you next week.
All right, you guys. Sounds good. Talk to you soon.
Shouldn't we put Matthew on? He sounds smart.
Yeah.
Matthew sounds like a smart guy, smart kid. 312-332-3776. We can continue the Hall of Fame discussion, Waddle. I think it's a good one. Like, we could go through all the ones who are for sure in. I think we'll all agree on all of them. I don't think we would disagree. And Allen Robinson was on the radio station today. Did he fire back at one national critic who says that he needs to be more consistent? We'll play you that coming up next.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
We were joking earlier today, too, about the different classes of Hall of Fame players. Like, Waddle always has wanted different rooms. We were making an airline earlier where we were saying that, like, quarterbacks would be given different seats, whether it be in first class, whether it be in coach, economy plus, you know, where you get a little extra leg room, maybe you get the emergency.
You had Eli in the back row in the middle seat.
Middle seat, but he's on the plane. He's on the Hall of Fame plane.
Is that plane just for quarterbacks or for everybody?
I think we were just doing it for quarterbacks.
Because, like, okay. Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
Then, I mean, like, Devin Hester, I mean, like, Devin Hester in our book is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he's
Devin
a middle Hester. Seat, back row guy on the Hall of Fame plane. Yeah.
Of course. So is a kicker, like when Vinatieri goes in.
I agree.
So you want to go through these, by the way, the quarterbacks? Let's see if we would even disagree with each other here regarding
Mitch.
Hall of Fame, North Carolina.
I bet he's not even in the North Carolina Hall of Fame.
Maybe not even in his high school Hall of Fame. Would he be?
That doesn't mean anything.
He wasn't heavily recruited, was it?
Yeah, like, I'm not saying that means anything. I'm sure that there are plenty of guys who... I bet there are plenty of people that are in the respective professional Hall of Fames that they played in that weren't in their own high school Hall of Fame, or they weren't in the Hall of Fame based on how they performed in high school. Maybe a few. Maybe not at all.
All right, so I mean, like the players who are playing, and we included Eli because he just retired. Like, cause we all think Eli's in. You are on board with me on Phillip Rivers.
Sylvia? Are we going? Do we think he'll get in, or would we put him in?
Or do you think he'll get in?
Do I think he'll get in?
We don't have a vote. Who cares?
My vote, in some ways, I feel is more valid than whatever they're doing in the room.
Okay, you can give us both. So you
there's a shock.
In, but you wouldn't put him in.
Yes, exactly. I think he gets in, but I would not
put
him in.
Mellor just said his vote is what? It's
more valid.
More valid than any of the... You know what? Get Dan Pompey or Peter King on the phone, and let's get them. We'll have Mellor and Peter King square off in a Hall of Fame conversation.
Going to have to do that on a podcast.
That's a good point.
Here are the for-sures, okay, who are playing now. Obviously, Tom Brady, he is in.
Yes.
Aaron Rodgers is in. Drew Brees is in. Ben Roethlisberger is in.
Yes, two Super Bowl rings.
Russell Wilson is in.
Yeah, I think Russ goes in.
And I already will put, Mahomes in.
Well, he's had the best start. Doesn't he not have the best start of any quarterback ever at this point statistically?
He is destined for the Hall of Fame right now.
Yeah, you know what? How many years in? Three seasons?
Three seasons in.
I'd be willing. I'd be willing to play three.
No, he's been in the league 3 years.
He's played
two.
Two starts. I would say I'll use the Terrell Davis model. Yes, I think Mahomes has accomplished enough, an MVP and a Super Bowl MVP. I would put him in.
Exactly.
In 2 years.
In 2 years.
So if he decides at the, like, before
go play
camp
baseball.
Starts that he, that yeah, that he retires, he goes in after 2 years.
They would probably hold it against him.
Now, there's no one else, right? Is there anyone else to debate
that's guaranteed?
Here? No, or even to debate. I don't even know who else is even on
the
debate.
Well, you said Philip Rivers and Matt Ryan.
Well, we did that, yeah. So Philip Rivers,
I think this one's easy, but I'll throw him out there. Stafford.
No,
because of his stats. He might, when he's all said and done, be the all-time leading passer, like in terms of yardage.
He's going to be Frank Gore as a quarterback.
He absolutely is going to be Frank Gore.
He's going to have 800 yards a season for 16 seasons and end up as the all-time leading
rusher.
He's
18th all-time in passing yards, Stafford.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, it's because they're always playing from behind.
And he's 30. And he's 32.
Yeah. Cam's only 31, isn't he? Isn't Cam 31?
Yes.
So he's got time, but no,
oh
he's
god,
not.
He's got five, 6 years of good, solid football in him.
We all say hell no on Joe Flacco, right?
No, he's not.
Yeah, Joe Flacco is not a Hall of Famer.
Kirk Cousins
is no. He's in the Money Hall.
You're just doing that to troll me.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
John in Schaumburg, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Johnny.
Hey guys, love the show. By the way, thank you for providing me with some sort of sanity. From the 2 to 6 o'clock hour while I'm working with a 4-month-old at home. So I appreciate
thank you.
It.
Congrats on the baby.
Thank you very much. She is the next generation of Chicago sports fan, and I am injecting her with that sickness as we speak.
There you go.
I wanted to say, so, you know, you guys were speaking earlier about guys who deserve their own room in the Hall of Fame, and I agree. I think there's different classes of legend, right? But one thing I didn't agree with, I think Devin Hester deserves his own room. What he did to the kicking game is unseen and has changed the game forever. And I'll still never forget the game against Denver when they kicked to him twice. And the coach at the time, Mike Shanahan, told Paul Sauerbrunn not to kick to him. He kicked to him, took it back for a touchdown. We won in overtime. And the next day he got released for kicking it to him. I've just never seen a guy strike so much fear into kickers that if he got his hands on the ball, the game was going to be changed. So that's all I wanted to say. I think Hester's a first ballot Hall of Famer and deserves all the credit.
You're talking to two Hester guys, but I mean,
yeah. I do buy the argument from Carm and Yurko about he's not playing the same number of plays. He has an enormous impact. He's the best return man in the history of the sport, as far as I'm concerned. Gale Sayers was fantastic as well. Don't get me wrong. But I didn't see much of Gale because I was too young. He goes in my opinion, no doubt about it. But look, he's not in the same wing of the Hall of Fame as, you know, Jim Brown or Joe Montana or
every
somebody.
Quarterback who touches it, 50 times in a game.
You know, so I push back on you guys a little bit because I feel like, and it's not that I don't think Devin necessarily belongs, but when I look at the backlog of players, I would put in so many guys before him personally, and so that's why I always have a hard time putting him in. Now, if you expanded it and say it doesn't have to be, you know, the five guys that go in every year, if you were willing to open it up a little more, I might be more willing to put him in personally.
Yeah, like I'm not going to hold it against him that other guys have it. I still believe he gets in, regardless of whether or not some other guys have been overlooked.
I don't think the Bears in that mid-2000s are as good as they are without Devin Hester. I don't think they get to a Super Bowl. And what I've always said there, people just want to look at touchdowns, just touchdowns. Every punt Devin Hester impacted, because of what the caller just said, that a lot of times the coach would have to scheme not to punt to him. So a lot of times they were forced to kick it out of bounds and it to be 20 yards shorter than it could have been. And then Rex Grossman is to go 20 yards less. It's like picking up a couple of extra first downs just because Devin Hester is simply standing back there. I think for what he did from that position, he impacted the game as much as anyone ever in that position. So,
yeah, he's still not in the first class cabin.
No, no. Demir, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Demir?
Hey, fellas, how y'all doing? Love the show.
We're good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Simply, my heart goes out to you. I'm praying for you, brother.
I appreciate it, Demir. Thanks.
You're welcome. So am I wrong by saying that Philip Rivers is Dan Fouts 2.0, as far as the numbers?
Yeah, it's a good conversation.
He's also a Charger. It's perfect.
Yeah. He's probably got a broadcasting career, right?
Yeah, Dan Fouts went in pretty easily, didn't he? But Dan Fouts, I know that the Air Coryell, they were kind of ahead of their time, weren't they?
Yes.
I mean, like, they were doing stuff when other people were. Like, he had a 4,700, a 4,800-yard passing season back in 80 and 81 when nobody was throwing for that many touchdowns.
Right. Exactly.
Let me take a guess. Just, you know, I love guessing games. How many touchdown passes to how many interceptions Dan Fouts threw?
It's not 2-1.
How many years did he play, Fouts, total?
Dan Fouts played a poo ton of years. 73 through 87, so let's just say 15 years.
So he's got...
over 300 touchdowns.
Yeah, 300 touchdowns, and I will go 160 interceptions.
I'm going to go higher back then. I'll go 320 touchdowns and 190 interceptions.
15 years. Dan Fouts threw 254 touchdowns and 242 interceptions.
Wow.
He threw 12 more touchdowns. Yeah.
He didn't average 20 touchdowns a year?
No, I do the math. I can't.
No.
15 years, he
did
had.
Not.
That's what I was basing it on.
Okay, how about this? He had two seasons. You know, the one weird fact that I always bring to your guys' attention is it's hard to throw for 30 touchdowns in any season, even modern day. He had two seasons where he threw for 30 touchdowns or more. Just two.
Yeah. It's incredible. And even going later in later years, Waddle, I always like to say, compare Troy Aikman's numbers to Jay Cutler's numbers.
Oh, Jay's numbers are better.
Like, they're very similar. Like, they're very similar numbers.
If you looked at Tony Romo's,
one of the greats.
Tony, if you looked at Tony Romo's numbers, you'd basically say shoo-in for Hall, but he's not going into the Hall of Fame. Like, his stats, Tony Romo's, are so much more impressive, just the numbers, than a lot of guys that are in the Hall.
You know what you should, I mean, this is not your fault, Waddle, but like, Fouts only started 171 games in his career.
Yeah, he wasn't their starter initially.
That's almost like it's a little more than 10, like 11.
That's your fault for not knowing Dan Fouts' career, Sylvie. Come on.
All right, coming up next, we're going to crosstalk with Hoodie. I got to play the Allen Robinson regarding LaDainian Tomlinson and his criticism on consistency and more of your phone calls. It's next.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home.
Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Allen Robinson was on today with Carmen and Yurko. He said there was no news on the extension front either. That was very interesting. But, you know, we played you about a week ago, LaDainian Tomlinson just scratching the surface on the Bears, giving you the overview. I don't know how much research he did or how well he's watched Allen Robinson play to play. But he said that A-Rob needs to get more consistent. And he said, I'm not even going to blame the quarterback. And he says, Allen Robinson had a good year, but he needs to be more consistent. And Allen Robinson, like a pro's pro, instead of going after LaDainian Tomlinson, just circled himself. Take a listen to the way the professional does it.
You know, again, I think for myself, you know, as far as a career standpoint, you know, I would say that obviously for me, I know that I have to play better and I want to play better. You know, as far as consistency, as far as putting years together, in that sense, I would agree with that in the sense of years, you know. But I thought last year, you know, from a game-to-game standpoint, I thought I was pretty consistent. You know, I know that I have to take my level, my game to another level, and I want to take my game to another level, you know. But at the same time, you know, again, I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. You know, I know for our receiving room, you know, it is plays that we have to make, and we do have to up our performance. You know, I think that I'll be the first one to say that, you know. But again, for myself personally, you know, I do think, you know, from a year to year standpoint, you know, putting together years, you know, is definitely what I want to do, and I think that I'm gonna do that this year, and that's something that I've thought about, you know. So again, I mean, it's an opinion, you know. I think it does have some relevance in the sense of me just speaking on our receiver room, saying that we can't up our game and that we need to, you know. And I think that's, you know, anybody across the league would say that about their room. So again, but you know, that's why we play football. You know, we have another year to go out there and prove ourselves and take our game to another level. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's the way a professional answers, right?
Leader.
Didn't point the finger on my Tomlinson. Team. Yeah.
Listen, I think that Allen Robinson, you know, if it's not LaDainian Tomlinson, if it's you or I saying that, we probably get a more heated response. But I think, you know, Allen probably
is one of the better players of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I'm so very happy that Allen Robinson's on this team. Now, yes. I wish that there would be someone on the other side of him that could also take some pressure off of him. But I think he's a fantastic player, and I think the Bears are great to have him in their offensive huddle.
All right, we've got the baseball show coming up here in just a few minutes. Jonathan Hood joins us right now. Big stuff going on, Hoodie. What's going on?
Well, what's big is Allen Robinson's response right there. I like that a lot. Could you imagine that some of the wide receivers we've had in town, how they would respond to that? What does he know? He's not in our room. He's not in our building, all that kind of stuff. But
calling
A-Rod.
Karma a clown.
Yeah. Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah. So I like that answer. I also would tell, you know, LaDainian that, you know, Allen Robinson cannot throw passes to himself. You know, someone's got to give him the ball. And maybe
there were times, Hoodie, where it looked like he did throw it to himself last season when he was running wide open.
So, I mean, that's a thing that you got to think about for 2020 is like, you know, yeah, he can be a better receiver, but, you know, it works both ways. Offensive line, quarterback, you know, get him the ball, and then he can get up the field. He definitely is a top 10 receiver in this league. He might be a 10, but he's top 10.
What about, you know, I was saying this a little bit earlier. You know me. I'm a Cubs fan.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got down to spring training in 2015, I fell in love with every single prospect. And anyone who would get my way and they would say, oh, don't count your chickens before they hatch, Sylvie. I'm like, let me enjoy it. This is fantastic. I had some people tweet me about Luis Robert today and the White Sox that they've won the summer camp championship. Like, this is some sort of a Bulls thing. Like, I think that every Sox fan should be excited and everyone should be proud of what has been happening on the South Side.
Well, yeah, you've lost over 800 games since the last time that you were in the playoffs. So let these guys have fun in summer camp. Look, like, losing sucks, as we all know. So for the White Sox, it does feel different because there's new faces in there, and they should feel optimistic. Should they be running around there with their heads down thinking, oh, it's going to be another bad year? They should feel good about it. I've been watching some of this stuff, and I like that Tim Anderson, Grandal, some of these other guys are catalysts for kind of the good times out there. It's not Madden-level Cubs good times, but at least there's some smiles on their faces, and it looks like they're having a good time. They look like they are ready for the season. That doesn't mean the World Series, but what it does mean is, hey, you know what? Despite Renteria being the manager of the White Sox, the team wants to continue to compete, and I like that.
You know what, Jonathan? What I like about what they did in terms of putting their roster together is they've got all these young guys that are that have you so very excited. But in the offseason, they added Encarnacion. They added guys. They added Grandal, as you mentioned. They added guys that have playoff experience. Even Cshek's got playoff experience. So you've got this wonderful blend of young talented players with some, you know, some veterans that can step in and provide some postseason leadership that bring a different commodity to the clubhouse. I think it's a nice mix.
Well, you know what? That's when you can do that when you spend money, Tom.
Yeah,
that's all true. Like the White Sox have always been for, in my lifetime. Sylvie knows this. It was always the White Sox were always bringing in attractions. Like, you know, Kenny Williams would say, you know who we should bring in? We should bring in Ken Griffey Jr. Well, he's at the end of his prime. Like, Kevin Youkilis would be great. Oh, Tom yeah. Seaver would be great. All these guys would come in just for a cup of coffee because they were attractions, not a reason to win. But now, as the names that you just mentioned, when you spend money and have a commitment to winning, this is what it looks like. Again, nothing's guaranteed. Tom, you know that, but it increases your chances to win when you got the mixture of good young talent and veterans that have been there and done that. So I like that a lot.
We were joking that Kenny Williams has signed better quarterbacks than Ryan Pace has.
How so?
Well, with Borchard and Josh Fields Adam Dunn.
That's right.
He would always do that, too. So.
You know, Adam Dunn, he would be really good on our team right now.
Mm. What's coming up on the baseball show?
Well, we got a Major League Baseball notebook that we will open up. We'll take a look at Giolito, amongst other strong pitchers around the big leagues. Also, how do you classify Cubs and White Sox baseball for 2020? We'll get into it coming up at 6:02.
All right, Hoodie. Great stuff. Thanks,
Hoodie.
There you go. Chuck Garfine, thank you to him. He joins us every Wednesday to talk Sox. Michael Wilbon was can't miss as always.
Can I also add this? This hour is brought to you by Trend Micro, Cloud One, the world's leading security services platform for cloud builders. Visit Trend Micro.